I am Ryan Orok, and doing what I loosely term consciousness radio for just a few weeks now, and I'm very happy to be here with Brett Snelson. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you, Ryan.
And Brett is a guy I met on the eco-sexuality boards, and what really got my attention is that Brett talked about having an unassisted home birth. And I want to get to that in just a moment and also learn a bit more about Brett. But I really appreciate you being willing to come on here, so thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Now, just so you know, is it okay if I do this podcast completely naked?
Sure.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit about you? Who are you? What do you do?
Who am I? But I guess a bit of the journey of how I got to where I am with what I'm passionate about. I'll try and sum that up in a bit of a brief way, not my whole life story, but from early in life, I found it much easier to connect with the modern human world than human world. And that eventually led me into a bit of activism and doing an undergraduate degree in environmental studies, and eventually led me into work in the area of conservation and environmental management type work. And through that, I started discovering that there was a little bit more than going on. It wasn't just as easy as implementing policies, getting things changed in government, like even working within the system. I found there was a lot of psychological blockages occurring along the way with all sorts of meetings. There's conflicts amongst environmentalists and that seemed to be operating on another level that was a lot deeper in our psyches. And that led me into studies in counselling and eco-psychology. And then that led me into understanding whole things around birth imprintings from birth trauma through to the way we're raised as children by our parents and in our culture. And that came just before I had my first child, that understanding. So I entered into parenting in a way where I was very open, without any punishment, no rewards type of manipulation going on. And I didn't know anyone that was parenting in that way. It took me quite a while to tap into a community that was parenting in compassionate ways, with nonviolent communication. Then eventually that... it's brought me to a place where I've been very active in areas of democratic education, natural parenting, movements of natural learning, which is a form of homeschooling, where there's no curriculum, no agenda placed on the child, but you follow their natural interests and support them in their benign agendas, which I see really important to sustainability in a way that if we're able to listen to each other that way, we're able to collaborate more easily and really get to the places of radical redesign of our social institutions that support people's benign agendas and move away from the violence in the world. You know, we see all the catastrophes that are going on.
Can I jump in just a moment? If I can concentrate on this point. First of all, I don't want this to slide by without people hearing it, because it's so important what you're saying. And one of the things I love about Brett, and that was immediately apparent, is that he walks the talk. And a lot of us are talking about, well, how do we be nonviolent? How do we make a better world? And it's evident to hear your story how you've been able to actually implement this. You're talking about natural parenting, natural learning, nonviolent communication with your children. I mean, this is just a start, as I know it goes a lot deeper. But I just want to say thank you, and I appreciate your example of really doing this, because I think it's important that people can see that this is really possible. And I want them to question from this, because I think this goes by very quickly. When you say no punishment or rewards, I think that goes in one ear and out the other for most parents. Mm. But that they realize, if you abandon this concept of I am the authority, I know more than you, you should do what I tell you, basically because I'm bigger and stronger than you, that a completely different relationship comes up between you and the children. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Explain your relationship with your children. What's it like compared to what you see, or what you saw before you were able to find a community that was into this? I mean, do your kids get timeouts? Do you spank them? do you tell them, you know, you won't amount to anything if you don't do this? And if you don't do these things, how do you get your kids to do what you mm-hmm. want? I'm going to be the devil's advocate here just a little bit.
yeah.
But
like, that question in itself, get them to do what you want.
Yes, exactly. And I realize that's planted that way. But let's say that. How do you get the kids to do what you want? If they and you know, do you spank them, or what do you do? Help me with this.
I'll start with a bit of a reframe of that.
okay.
In a way that, perhaps you might be like, there's something that I'm not enjoying rather than me getting to do what I want, you know, because it's in an equal partnership with children. It's like my needs are important and so are theirs. So rather than implementing an authoritarian regime with them where I maybe reward them with lollies if they do something good or bad. I might punish them. I go for a heart connection. And in my experience, it is easier with my children, and some other children have been raised in ways that follow things like nonviolent communication, because the children have a vocabulary to start with around their needs and their feelings. And I'm not saying, I think there's a really important distinction to talk about with feelings from the nonviolent communication perspective. And that's like, we're talking about the emotions, mm-hmm. not like, I feel like you're manipulating me. That's sort of like a statement of blame.
Right. You know,
I might feel annoyed rather than saying that you're doing something to me.
Right.
So when the kids have this vocabulary of what they're needing, I find it easy to communicate with them and bring them back into their heart. You know, there is conflict in our family and things happen, and I speak to my son, you know, I've done something to the other kids that they weren't enjoying, and I just find out what's going on for him. I might just say that. He's 6 years old, so he's got quite an understanding. So I can say, you know, Caden, what's happening for you? I'm seeing this or that. I'm seeing that you you've been playing really rough with Lotus, and I'm noticing this has been happening through the day. So what's going on? And he'll just open up or not. Sometimes he can be resistant. And that to me, that raises a little flag to me, like, oh, you know, he's got some stress built up or something, and we can talk about it. And that moved me into another phase where I might sit in another room with him and just connect with his heart and find out what's going on. And it might not take many words at all. It might be just my presence and attention, just loving attention towards him. Okay. He might start crying or he might start yelling at me. I don't know.
Okay, let me start just before we go into this, because this is just super important stuff that you're going through. And you're such an expert at it that it sounds really easy the way that you're explaining it. But my experience, or even what I was taught when I went through the Rosenberg course of NVC, and I love NVC, is that if someone isn't opening up to you with their needs, then either they don't feel like you're going to listen to them if they do.
Yeah.
Or like you said, they're kind of missing the vocabulary. They don't even know how to express what's going on for them. But you're saying that if you're present in a heart sense, and I mean, this is something that it's very, very difficult to explain to someone how to do this, but if you're present in a heart sense with your son when he's feeling something, that he's able to tap into those feelings and expression happens, whether it's crying or, like you said, maybe even yelling at you. So am I understanding this? Am I describing this right so far?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then assuming now he's crying, or, you know, does something need to change very often? Does he want you to have a different behavior then when this happens? Or is it just emotional release that needs to happen with him? How does that work?
Yeah. Often it would be emotional release. And, you know, say if it's around anger or something, usually there's sadness underneath that. But say it starts off with anger and he's yelling at me, it's coming at me. And I just hold that space, like I'm not judging it. And I know that, you know, there's lots of love between us, and I'm not taking it personally. So I can hold that space. He feels really safe to just let loose. And then suddenly he'll break down and down into crying, and then just be in this sudden, just there'll be a shift where there's enough release. And, you know, just be in a state of bliss. Just it's hard to describe. You know, he'd just be looking really deep in my eyes and just be in a state of bliss like he was as a baby. We started this very early on, pre-verbal. I'd hold that kind of space. Yeah.
So you're not saying to him, "Don't you use that tone of voice with me, young man?"
No.
You laugh, but this is what I see, right? So that's why
yes.
But you're saying that if you let him enter this emotion without judging it and without feeling personally attacked by it, that the reality, which is a deeper, more sensitive part, will come up, right?
Yeah. Fantastic. And this is the it's unconditional love. There's no conditions on him. It's like my relationship with my partner, you know, there's no conditions on love. Anything outside of that, you know, to me, is not love. You can't put conditions and love together.
So it sounds like to me that your unconditional love is your unconditional presence. Would that be fair?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That is very okay. We may come back to this if we have time. I'm not sure we're going to, because there's so many things I want to talk to you about today. But can we move on to the natural learning and natural parenting? First of all, that's a type of homeschooling, you said, right?
Yeah.
So, gosh, let me play the devil's advocate again. Your kids aren't going to have any friends. Where they're going to get their social skills? And second of all, how are you going to teach them biology and physics? And are you experts in all these things? So what is it that's going on here? How do you deal with these objections, and how are you dealing with that?
Yeah. You know, I might just fill that out a bit about what natural learning is.
Please.
In that our children not learning through a curriculum at all.
Right.
They follow their own agendas in their learning. You had a question about their social life, which is funny, that way often comes up. Uh-huh. You know, how are your children going to be socialized? And, you know, there's couple of different takes on that. Like if I look at socialization from like a psychohistory perspective, that's like means their agendas have been imposed on them and they fit into a particular society and things by right. compensating themselves. And the other one is learning social skills. I understand that side. And they get to interact with people all through the community. It's not like we're living out in the middle of Australia completely isolated. We have there's a small group, small community of us parenting and schooling, I guess you call it, homeschooling in a way, in that way. So they get to interact and there's some real benefits about that in terms that they're not segregated into age groups. And my experience of interacting with natural learners, it doesn't seem to make much difference to them. There's a different energy in the connection. So if I'm talking to a teenager who'd been brought up this way, they don't seem to separate themselves as much
right.
from in their age groups. Because they're used to just talking to people in community. And that comes down to another part of it. I don't see myself as an expert in anything. And I really trust the diversity that we find in community, that there's so many learning opportunities for children to tap into. There's so many people willing to share their gifts, their knowledge. I have friends that have raised their children this way. And so as an example, a friend in Perth, her daughter being homeschooled in a natural learning way, she was tapping into all sorts of mentors in the community. She had a real interest in law, and by the time she was 16, she entered university and she'd never been registered for school at all, not even for homeschooling.
Uh-huh.
And she was just following her passions, and what she'd found was that mentors, people who are really passionate about the work and what their purpose in their life, they're so happy to share their knowledge with a young child who shares the same passion. You know, you get really excited about I love sharing my passions with people. It's a natural flow. So I trust in our community that, our children are able to tap into the diversity out there. It's just like nature, like more diverse. The more we thrive.
Now, to ask you what you mean by your community, are you in an intentional community, or what do you mean when you say that?
I say that in a broader sense. That there's online communities. Like these days, our kids can tap into, mentors from all around the planet.
Right, yeah.
There's such a big resource for that. But, yeah, we are living on an intentional community too. It's a very small community. We only have 4 shares on our community. But we're surrounded by many other intentional communities in the area that we live. So
does a lot of – okay, so it isn't necessary to maybe have an intentional community. But does a lot of the teaching take place within local people, or is it more online, like you said, with your children? I guess they're a bit young yet, right? How old are they?
There's a 9-year-old, 2 6-year-olds, and a 3-year-old.
Okay,
so a 3-week-old.
Right, yeah, congratulations, by the way.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that story in a moment. But it's not like they're out, at the blacksmithing, making horseshoes at 9 years old quite yet. So maybe that community,
That's interesting. I went to a unschooling conference 2 years ago, and my son at that time was 4, and they were learning how to blacksmith there.
Okay, so there you go. So they are learning to be blacksmiths at four.
I can choose. It's so the 9-year-old here, she's got this real fascination with bird life, and you know, she's picking up my university books and things around birds and reading up about them on her own terms. And she might ask me questions. I'm here to answer her questions, but I'm not here to tell her what to do and what direction to go in. And it's fascinating. And I don't think many 9-year-old girls would be going to the level that she is with bird life. It's just incredible. Because she's just following her passion. And by the way, she's never had any formal lessons in learning to read or write, and she just reads book after book. It's fascinating to watch.
Really? So she just taught herself, or she asked you, what does this letter mean?
Yep.
Or?
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, that's how it's been going. No, just out of her own interest, she would, I wasn't with my partner at that time because we're in a blended family.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, my son does the same thing, like just would occasionally ask what this letter is, and you know, I'm there to support that. And they just learned on their own, but I don't take them aside and sit them down for a formal lesson.
I can feel the fear of, you know, if we had a third person in this room who wasn't familiar with these ideas, I could feel the fear, oh my God, what will happen if they, you know, just decide not to learn or whatever, or if, you know, it seems to me it requires quite a letting go of control and trusting in, I don't know, the universe, whatever you want, your children, to let this happen.
Mm. Yeah, there's a real trust in knowing that as humans we just naturally learn. There's not a day or a moment goes by that we're not bringing information and synthesizing it into a learning experience. And we don't really get taught to breathe or crawl or walk. It kind of just naturally happens. Because we're learning and just taking in things all the time. And it's having trust in that. And there's something different about when a child is following their passions on their terms. They'll just gobble things up so fast and just learn in an accelerated way. And I know in experience for that some democratic schools have like... I'm just trying to think of the one A.S. Neil started up in Europe. Oh, I can't remember. But there is a
score.
No, it's not Waldorf, because that's still got a curriculum.
Right, okay.
Well, the ones that are around in Australia anyway. It's Summerhill School. And that was in the 1920s that one formed. And yeah, children there are not required to go to class or anything, and some of them may not. They may just choose not to participate in any classes for a year or so. Then they'll find that suddenly they get interested in something and their learning just accelerates because it's on their own terms. Yeah, so it's fascinating. But I can understand, yeah, there's a lot of fear in our society, and I think it's something to do with a little bit of comparative shaming that goes on in our early years. We're kind of comparing ourselves against each other, and a lot of our education is based on competition like that. You know, you got to get your gold stars to be the best, and often people are also attaching their self-esteem to this, and yeah, it can be quite tragic for some people going through the formal education systems in that sense.
Right. And this reminds me of something that I'd never put together quite yet, but now that you say it, someone passionate about something and studying something on their own terms, you know who Bobby Fischer is?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, Bobby Fischer, Robert James Fischer, was kind of an introverted kid from New York who loved chess. And he was at school, and he would have the textbook on the table and the chess book on his lap. And he was just passionate about chess, and he studied chess. And for years and years and years, the Russians were the world champions, and they had entire schools devoted to chess and how to learn chess and curriculums and things, and there was no one who could beat them. But this kid, without any, with virtually no coaching and, you know, just a passion that he went after, maybe despite the things that were put in his way, he was the United States champion at 14, and he was the world champion at 29. And this just reinforces the story that you're talking about. You have a 9-year-old who's studying college-level bird information that she wouldn't even have a chance to look at because she'd be inundated with other things that, you know, perhaps don't interest her at all if she was going to a normal school. But she may be this ultimate bird expert that, you know, helps us in our understanding of birds because you're letting her free to do this. You're trusting her.
Mm. Yeah.
So good on you.
Yeah. There's also the idea that they're happy in whatever endeavors they take on as they grow into their adulthood. They may be extremely happy as street sweeper.
Right.
Or they could be, you know, into brain surgery. You don't know which direction, but I'd rather them be a happy street sweeper than a miserable brain surgeon.
So a question.
You know what I mean? It's a different right. value system.
Right. You don't have to be a doctor or a lawyer to be a good person, to be accepted, to be loved, etc., right?
Mm. Yeah.
Which is what I've kind of grew up with, and I've seen a lot of this type of, you have to do this. I want to ask a question. Do your children have to do anything?
Ah. No. Yeah, we try to go with that philosophy, definitely from the NVC perspective.
Uh-huh.
It can be very challenging sometimes as a parent, as an adult, who has a lot of unlearning to do.
So no chores or nothing that you say, okay, but you have to do this before you go to bed?
No, kind of just like, I don't know. Things just flow. So, you know, there's resistance and, you know, I have needs or starting to get frustrated because the house is getting a bit untidy. It's kind of like expressing my heartfelt sense of what's going on for me. You know, I get frustrated, I'm getting tired and cleaning up and things like that. And I speak with them and they kind of, I don't know, it's like a sense of heart connection with them. And when I've got them and they're listening to that, I find they're very cooperative. And it's funny, like by the time my son was like 3, and I remember we were at a conference, it was a parenting conference, and somebody said the words "have to," and he just turned me and said, "What?" He said, "Daddy, that person said have to." And like he could just pick up on it because he knew that. He had that understanding of that concept early in life. So they kind of, yeah, they understand the concept of connecting with our hearts and understanding each other's needs and coming to, I don't know, something emerges out of that where nobody's compensating or compromising, and new things may emerge out of the conversation so that we're all our needs are met. But it is a very challenging area in the area of parenting, that's for sure.
So, because, yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because children, you know, they have a different view on things. You know, their playroom can be very messy, and to me, that's my judgment. To them, they know where everything is, and they're happy to be like that. But sometimes if their playroom is getting a bit too messy, and for them, I mean, I'm sensing there's a lot of frustration because I can't find things, and then I talk to them about what's going on, why they're feeling frustrated, so, you know, with their room, and that they can't find particular toys that they want and have a space to draw in, and then we'll talk about what the room looks like and how much easier it would be if they have order and things like that. And then I find they're cooperative and, you know, they're there to help themselves too.
So it's around reason and logic and how do I get a better result for myself, and everything gets resolved, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's being sort of inclusive.
Inclusive. You know,
there's a thing. I do notice in parenting, like, there's expectations that come up around cooperation, but not many parents in the wider culture seem to have a look at how they might cooperate with their children.
Right.
Are we cooperating with them and expecting them to cooperate with us? It's kind of a two-way flow.
Right. Now, I want to take a little break from the family topic.
Yep.
And talk a bit about intentional community and your intentional community. How did you get into it? Who started it? How many people are there? You know, financial situation, how do you decide, make decisions, things like that, if you can just go over that really briefly.
The community I'm living in, I'm renting here. So I think, I don't know how long ago it started, maybe in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a lot of the community started here in the 70s. And because it's a small community...
And how many people is small?
There's four shares, so there's three other families.
Four families. Okay,
Yeah, two are older, and their children have left, and they're originally here. So two of those shares, and so there's not too much to talk about in terms of. Intentional community in my own experience of where I'm living, because we're just kind of because of the size of it, we don't need to have any formal meetings or anything like that. We're just on the land sharing the space, and everybody's quite cooperative with each other, and there's no real financial issues there around sharing things.
Okay, so this isn't a community kitchen, community worship, whatever. Not everybody's all in the same spiritual direction. It's just kind of, you live, it sounds like it's just a sort of a normal situation, actually.
Yeah. Well, everybody here has got strong conservation values.
Oh, okay.
And I guess that's something that ties us together.
All right.
Because I know there are some other communities that have more like a spiritual focus or things like that. That seems to bring us together. But and the simplicity of it being only four shares, kind of easy living.
Yeah, a sort of starter community or something.
Mm.
Okay, then I want to get the topic that interested me most of all, and I think one that is absolutely going to be unbelievable for a lot of people, and that is, if I understood you right, you decided to have an unassisted home birth, which means you... and your wife were the only adults present and participating. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. And that includes right through pregnancy. There's no professional support.
No ultrasounds. No doctor's visits. No nothing.
No.
Why not?
Why not? Well. The way, well, where do I start? There's so many reasons, Ryan.
Go for it.
You know, there can be all sorts of things that happen in interventions, and I guess the main thing for us was bringing life in through love more than anything. And, you know, my partner's, she's so very in tune with her body and very open, and so there's a lot of trust that we weren't needing any support through pregnancy. There was no reason to see a doctor. She was healthy and energetically feeling really aligned, and we're in such blissful love throughout the whole process of pregnancy. And so it's just a natural progression for us to go out of such beautiful lovemaking, the beginning of conception, to be birthing in that way. And we were wanting a really central birthing experience. And so it's like we wouldn't invite somebody else into our bedroom when we're making love, so to watch.
Right.
And so it's a very, we wanted it to be very intimate in that way. And the thing about birthing, the flow of oxytocin, the love chemical as it's known, it's very conducive to it, and natural and, you know, gentle birthing space. And we see that kind of thing as really important, particularly with the imprinting. You know, people have, Eric, known about, you know, breath work with rebirthing and how that sort of birthing experience can really imprint on our psyches. And because it forms a foundation, well, actually in utero, you know, we're forming foundations in our growth. Building on the previous
a friend
stages
of, mine.
Of our lives.
Right. Yeah. If I can interrupt a moment.
Mm.
A friend of mine, he put a video of basically from right after the birth. Now, I haven't had children, but he put a video on from right after birth in the hospital, what happens. And I watched this poor little baby get wrapped in this aluminum blanket, carried over to this, to a completely different room. He's like running through the hospital with a video camera. They pull the baby out. They measure a length. Then they stick the baby on this this ice cold scale, and then they get a weight. If you're lucky, they're gonna, you know, if you know, they drop silver nitrate in the eyes, which hurts terribly. They slap the baby so it cries. First of all, I mean, this was a horrible experience. He was like, oh, I'm so happy my baby's here, and shared this with everyone. I said, how could you possibly let them do this to your child?
Mm.
And first of all, there's just the very cold and clinical experience of bringing new life into this world. We've made everything so clinical. We've made everything so logical, so left brain, so, okay, well, what is the measurement of this, and is this chemical too high, or whatever, you know? And we're gathering all this information with our brain. And it's not like we have this beautiful setting where we bring our children into the world. We have this sterile, cold, white place that isn't warm and cuddly and comfy at all. Mm. So I can, you know, for me, it just seems natural to what you're talking about. It's an extension of the lovemaking. That's such a beautiful concept, and I've never heard anyone say it like that.
Mm.
And that you create a warm, cuddly, loving environment I guess you had the kids somewhere else during this time, so you had concentration for each other, or how did you do that?
They were asleep.
They were asleep.
At the time. So, and they actually came in at 4 a.m. Shortly after my partner got out of the birthing pool. And we were kind of trusting that. We were suspecting it was going to be on the night of the 10th moon, and that happened. So it's pretty amazing.
Just kind of intuitively, uh-huh.
Yeah, well, Alice has done, she's a graduate of the School of Shamanic Midwifery, and so she's done a lot, she's really in tune with her body and terms of moon cycles as well, and often pregnancy and birth will follow 10 moons, which is the round about 9 months. And so it was on the full moon, and we were suspecting our child would be born then. And she had an intuition that it would be at night and the children would be asleep. And if they weren't, they would have been okay too. You know, we're a pretty open family, and that would have been just as beautiful to have them present.
Okay, so you wouldn't have farmed them out to grandma and grandpa or whatever in that time?
No, no. But we did have a young woman who's really switched on that in Bellingen, that we may have been able to call on if we needed some support in terms of providing the children food and things like that, because I'm really wanting to hear statements of, you know, I'm hungry, I need this and need that. Well, I mean, like a birthing space, it's hard to describe the experience. It's so, as a man, to be so in the moment, so present, just holding that space for her feminine to really, her feminine energies to really take over it, and for her to open and soften and open and soften, just keep opening, and to be in such a deep space of bliss. And this is one of the reasons why we chose an assistant birth, so we could really go deep into that space with no one else around us that could create another, you know, another dynamic. It was just us two in such an altered state. So hard to describe.
I totally, yeah, I understand, but I'm getting quite the picture from what you're saying.
Mm. Yeah. And you're right, like, in about often births, there's not only just the risk in hospitals of having interventions, it's like in inductions and C-sections, but the way the baby's delivered, and it's just treated like an object that needs to be measured and weighed, and it's all very scientific, you know, without a thought to what's happening to the child, what's the child's experience and coming into a world like that, in somebody, a foreign person's hands, amongst all this clinical measurements and things. It's such a different experience. There seems to be some assumption that the child has no feelings or perceptions or something, or they're just ignored.
Right, babies don't remember anything anyway, you know, until they're a few years old, and it doesn't really matter what you do to them. It's kind of the attitude, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like that sometimes, yeah, in those situations. And, And with the home birthing choice that we made, you know, we're doing it with a lot of trust, and we understood a lot of different things. We weren't going into it naive. We understood things like resuscitation and things like that. So we were quite confident, and we had a lot of trust in Alice's body. She's really in tune with that, and she had no fear. Fear is one of the things that can really constrict the body and contract it, which is not helpful for the. And so that may not be for everybody. And there's home births where people can have midwives and who are really warm and can still create such beautiful warm space for that.
But you did have, so Alice, I mean, she's trained, you did have training, you did understand what was going on. You weren't just completely trusting your feelings that everything would be all right.
Well, yes, we're trusting our feelings as well, yeah.
Right.
But we weren't naive about it.
But you weren't naive about it. That's a good way to explain it.
And to that, to us, you know, birthing a child into such a deep space of love and bliss into that, the whole process like that, it's just such an optimal way to start life earthside. It's a major event in somebody's life and birth.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, it's a beautiful, peaceful birth without trauma. But, you know, optimizing that life's experience. And that's the foundation where they start from.
Right.
They have no heat, like... I doubt whether he's got any healing to do around his birth. He hardly cries. Like, two of my children were born through cesareans.
Mm-hmm.
And they had so much emotional release to do in their first, you know, year of their life. I'm seeing such a difference.
Is there anything you do differently next time?
Is there anything I'll do differently next time?
Yeah, is there anything that you... It sounds pretty perfect, but is there anything you learned or anything you think I'll do this differently next time, perhaps?
No, I think that... To me, it was the ultimate perfection of birth in the way it could be.
Fantastic. It sounds absolutely beautiful.
It was, yeah, you know, for us it is totally ecstatic, blissful, orgasmic. It's just amazing, yeah. And to connect with, from a man's perspective, to connect with a woman in such deep bliss and pleasure, yeah, it was just... amazing. Like, I could feel the energy moving through me and through her, like, because we've practiced in tantric sort of sacred union and things like that, and sensitive to energies, and the energy of birth is absolutely incredible. Yeah, so I wouldn't do anything different.
Sounds fantastic.
I think our family's large enough right now, the blended family. Be thinking of a next time. It's mind-boggling.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that experience with me and with us. I had one more question, or one more area, just to open up briefly, and that is, you've been involved with ecology and sustainability. How are we going to save the world? What are your thoughts about this?
Well, for me, what I've come to, like I briefly touched on in my life story, is really developing like enabling autonomy, an understanding of mutualistic relationships, and a real sense of place for children. Like, so they're operating out of their benign agendas, not some compensatory personality that they've developed through rewards and punishment systems, so that we're able to work together to really come up with some radical redesign of some of our social structures. And so we start to look at things a little bit different to your typical triple bottom line, which might be, we typically in the area of sustainability that I've worked in, that constantly looking at areas of the economy and right. society, and then maybe you look a little bit about the environment.
So first things. Of but all, sorry, but I just want to say, so first of all, it's about how we raise children, if I understood that correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So continue from there. Well, I think that was important.
And also healing from our own distresses from childhood,
right.
our wounding and our conditioning. There's so much unlearning for us to do. And if we can get past that and unlearn where we're acting out of fear, and how can we act out of a space of love where we're not coming from a fear based on our early childhood traumas, and be really clear in our communication in that way. So it's not just the children, that happens simultaneously. As we heal as parents, we're able to connect with our children's hearts and enable this autonomy and their creativeness, which is going to be really needed to help heal the planet. It's really need to look at completely different ways to the way that we're living on this planet at the moment. And yes, so moving away from the way I see things is moving away from the idea of placing economy versus society versus the environment. The way I see it is more like, well, we're coming from a human perspective. So we look at our personal aspects, the way we interact, the way we relate with each other. And then another part is our social structures, having them designed in a way that are supportive of people. And this includes, our social structures includes our economy. I don't know what that might look like, but an economy that supports it. But economy not as a main heading like we typically see in triple bottom line. And
GDP
then...
GDP growth or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Not like, how do we keep GDP growing while we save the oceans? Yeah?
Yeah, it's more like, well, how does this economy support people and the planet?
Right.
Not for economy's sake.
Right.
And the way our even our educational institutions, what agendas are being pushed there? Is it, I know the development of compulsory schooling in America in the early days, parents were defending their children with guns against the system.
Right,
it's not happening now, but. Because it came about through the Industrial Revolution. It was beneficial for corporations to have people educated in a way that they can work in the system.
Right.
So it wasn't for the benefit of the people, it was for the benefit of corporations. So if we can redesign our education institutions too to be more democratic and to be enabling people's benign agendas, which I really trust in. If we get down to the deeper part of our soul purpose, it's not to be destroying the planet and each other.
Right.
I doubt that very much.
Right.
So if we have social structures that can support that, and then things would naturally flow into the way we relate with the modern human world. that one of the things we really need to heal is the way we relate to each other and to our children.
Right.
If we can't do that, we're going to have a hard time relating to the rest of the planet too.
Yeah, if we're relating in violent, bullying ways in our families, it's going to be difficult to create utopian paradise environmentally, yeah?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So first of all, healing ourselves, helping our children, working non-violently, for lack of a better term.
Mm.
And then considering people, and that the economy serves the people and the planet instead of what it's been constructed to do, or what the educational and economic systems have been created for, which seems to be to serve a small percentage, sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's no planet, no one will be helped if there's no life at some point.
That's true.
Okay. Well, that's something.
Planet will keep going.
Planet will be fine, yeah. Planet will be fine. It survived worse than. You heard the joke, two planets meet in space. One says to the other, "How you doing?" He says, "Well, pretty bad. I think I've got Homo sapiens." And he says, "Oh, don't worry, that passes." Any last words of wisdom that you would like to share? I really appreciate your unique view and your life story, which I don't know how it seems to you, but it's very, very unusual in this world. And to see someone who's actually doing it, and not just theorizing about it, as a lot of us are, is very inspirational. So thank you so much.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. I guess the main thing, I just love to see people be free in their hearts, like in a true sense, in an authentic way, to follow their heart desire. And when embarking on that journey of unlearning our conditioning and to be more unconditional in the world we love, is to really consider small, meaningful steps rather than large agendas of trying to change the world. Because,
those large,
you know, we can get really overwhelmed by big projects, and I really trust that it's going to be all the small, meaningful actions we take towards healing ourselves and the planet that are going to get us there.
Right. Yeah. The big actions tend to move, if we say, well, we're going to reduce carbon emissions by so-and-so percent, then almost inevitably, this moves towards some sort of coercive measures to make it happen at some point.
Mm.
Punishment and reward again.
Oh, yeah.
And that freedom isn't there anymore that you're talking about. That personal freedom, that freedom to allow others to express their needs and to get their needs met. So that's an excellent point. Our little actions. It's millions of little actions that create gigantic problems, and it'll be millions of little actions that solve them, if I'm understanding you right.
Yeah. Yep, you've got it right.
Well, thanks so much, Brett. It's great to get to know you a bit deeper. I've been enjoying your contributions. I read also your beautiful, Brett has an absolutely beautiful, and I'll post this, story of the birthing experience that you both took time in a dialogue to express.
Mm.
And that was just gorgeous. Thank you for sharing that. I'll post a link to that with this.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Thanks for that, Ryan.
And
that kind of articulates the story a little bit more. I'm kind of a bit removed from it now.
Right, yeah. I know. Yeah, thanks so much for getting up early to do this as well.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much that. I think it's more the having a 3-week old.
Oh, okay.
And not having much sleep sometimes. And
right. So is there anything that me or people listening can do for you? Yeah, I don't.
Oh, please just have a look at the birth story. The birth story is posted on a site which is a new venture for Alice and I called Tantric Parenting.
Right.
And we're in the process of developing online courses and putting some information out about parenting in ways that are more compassionate and loving and move towards things like static births and other things in the areas of conception, pregnancy, birth, and parenting. They're the four areas that we're looking at. And have a look at the site. That'd be great. I'd love people to get on there and have a look around.
So
enjoy the story.
Right. Was that tantricparenting.blogspot.com, or what was it exactly?
So it's www.tantricparenting.com.au.
Oh, okay. Tantricparenting.com.au. I knew there was something else there. .au. Okay, great. So we'll send everybody over there. And if they can have the kind of experiences that you two are having, then I think that people will just flock to that site.
Yeah, right.
Because I think... Sorry?
My partner, Alice, does a lot of birthing empowerment coaching for women.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Her site is www.blossomingwoman.com.au.
Blossomingwoman.com.au. Okay.
And I'm also available through that site to co-coach with their partners, with their men, to bring in a male perspective.
Okay.
Support.
So if she's available to coach women, you can coach men on that blossoming men, but you're both working to coach people, help people be better, more fulfilled parents. And birthers, and having the experience of everything connected to children in a more holistic and connected and beautiful way. For those who don't understand, you know, Tantra, what is Tantra? But, you know, a more holistic, beautiful, connected way. I think there are so many people who are kept from the truth because they know not where to find it. So this is fantastic if we can provide other options for people that you just aren't going to find by watching TV and looking in the newspaper. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. It's great talking with you.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
Have a great day. All right, bye-bye.